sitting on the box, stomp your feet, start clapping. Got a real good feeling, something bad about to happen.
Helmets and Heels, brought to you by Underwood Jewelers on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. Here's Jessica Blaylock, Donna Murphy, Lauren Brooks, and Blythe Brumleave.
Welcome to Helmets and Heels, brought to you by Underwood Jewelers. After taking it to the streets this past Tuesday night at Black Sheep, live with Toby Gerhart, that was a great time. We are now back in studio down at Everbank Field. We are also a couple of days removed from Jacksonville's fourth loss of the season. That was, of course, to the San Diego Chargers, a 33-14 final in that one. But it is the first game that we got to see Blake Bortles start at quarterback. We are going to get into his performance. We're going to hear from him on how he thought he played. We're also going to grade out his performance from our perspective. But a serious topic that we're going to get into tonight, concussions. Concussions in the NFL. We saw now that the Jags have suffered another concussion in the form of Dwayne Grotz, which was a really scary moment, ladies, this past Sunday against San Diego. What do players think about concussions in the NFL? Would they let their sons play football at an early age? One of their answers might surprise you. But first off, ladies, let's get it back to Blake Bortles and his first NFL start. There was a lot of excitement heading into this game against the Chargers.
I think he was the only excitement.
Possibly. Yeah, we've known the Jags have struggled on the West Coast in recent years. The defense has really been struggling is an understatement to start the season, but a lot of excitement and momentum with Blake Bortles starting at quarterback. First off, real quick, let's hear from Bortles himself and what he thought of his performance on Sunday.
You know, I didn't play very well, did some stupid things, but you know, we're continuing to raise the bar and trying to get better each and every week, and that's what we're going to do.
Lauren, he doesn't think he played well. He set all sorts of records for a rookie for both the Jags and the NFL as far as completion percentage and so forth. He was 29 of 37, completed almost 79% of his passes. How would you grade Blake's first start for the Jaguars?
Well, I would love to give him an A because I thought that, I'm not going to, but I would love to because I thought that he came out and played with such confidence that you wouldn't expect from someone in their first ever NFL start. And especially knowing he's watched the film, he knows his offensive line is porous and he's going to have to make some plays based off of that. But I'm going to have to end up giving him a B. And I'll go B plus just based on the fact that, he did have the two interceptions. One, I don't really fault him for, but there was a couple times that I thought, his footwork kind of could have improved. He should have kind of stepped forward versus stepping towards the sidelines. But overall, I was really impressed, especially in the first half. He went 13 of 15. I mean, he and Rivers were almost on par. That's amazing.
Okay, so we're going a B plus for Lauren. All right, I just want to see what his GPA for his first start will be after we all give our grades. All
Absolutely.
Right, D-Murph, what about you? We saw some of Blake's ability to make something out of nothing, very Roethlisberger-like. What did you think?
It was. You know, they couldn't sing his praises higher, you know, for the commentators on TV. But I'm going to give him a B in the first half and a C in the second half. And, Lauren, you did speak of, you know, a couple of the interceptions. One, though, was completely on him when he was trying to make something out of nothing, like you say, Jess. And then he decided to throw to the standing wide receiver. You never, and they even say, I'm like, why did you? Of course you never throw to the standing wide receiver. He already has a man covering him right there. So you're throwing to him, and the guy's already ready to expect that ball right there. So that was one rookie mistake, which I'm sure he will never do again, I hope. But I'm going to go with B in the first half, C in the second half.
All right, so what does that average out to? A B minus or a C plus? All right.
We'll go with B minus.
We'll go B minus because
we like you,
Blake. We'll give you a B minus. All right, Blythe, what do you say?
I'm going to go C plus only because of the whole caliber of the game. The first half, I would give him an A for just because, like Lauren said, he was on par with Phillip Rivers. But the second half, we didn't score at all. And that was a struggle for me. I think one of the biggest things in the NFL is making those second half adjustments. And I didn't see much out of that. So I would have to give him a C plus, even though, I mean, he had a hell of a rookie performance for him. I think he ranked first in the NFL for rookie performances for the quarterback position. So I would have to go C plus.
All right, C plus. So far we've got a B plus from Lauren, a B minus from Donna, a C plus from Blythe. I am going to give him a solid B. I was impressed with his completion percentage. I think it would have been a little bit higher if some of his receivers hadn't dropped passes. Of the two interceptions, I totally agree with you, Donna. There was one that was completely on him, but we saw the one that he was attempting to throw to Cecil that was intercepted, and Cecil basically stopped on the route. And, of course, that was because he was hurt. But
come to find out after, right?
Right. It came out of the game, I think, a few plays later. But that one I don't put on Bortles. So one touchdown pass. It technically should have been one interception on Bortles, one interception maybe on Cecil and the receivers. But other than that, I was impressed again with his ability to escape pressure, to elude defenders. It's unbelievable the way that you see Bortles operate in the pocket. Just his pocket awareness, his ability to extend plays. I mean, people always make the comparison to Ben Roethlisberger. That's going to be an interesting matchup when the Jags play the Steelers this week, to kind of see those guys right next to each other and how they compare. But I thought Bortles' performance was above average. Not excellent. It wasn't mistake-free, but I thought it was good. I'm okay with giving him a B. So let's see, a B plus, a B minus, a C plus. I think that's going to grade out to a B slash B minus.
Yeah, I think so. And I want to ask you two ladies, I know Jessica knows this because she covers the team, but when Blake threw that touchdown pass, did you kind of wonder who Nick Jacobs is?
I had no clue.
I covered the team and I was still wondering in the press conference Monday who Nick Jacobs was. Obviously, I knew who he was, but Mark Long and I were sitting next to each other, and I think Mark was going to write a tweet about something that Gus had said about Nick, and he looks at me, and he's like, his name's Nick Jacobs, right? And I'm like, let me Google it just to be 100% sure, and then we come to realize it's spelled N-I-C, not N-I-C-K, right. So don't worry, we got all of our facts correct. But
by the way, was that the first time Mark Long's name has been mentioned on Helmets and Heels?
I think so. So congratulations, Mark Long.
I'm sure you are in about that.
Elite company now, my friend. But yeah, and you know what? That's great. They need some depth at that position. So if a guy like Nick Jacobs can come in, they signed him off the Saints practice squad, I believe, and make a play, then that's great. Do you remember who the first touchdown pass was to start the season last year?
Was it Clay Harbour?
Mm-hmm. Was it? I don't think it was. Was it Clay Harbour? Actually, it might have been Clay Harbour. You know what? Before I ask a question, I should probably know the answer. I think it was Clay Harbour, actually, now that you mention it. So, you know what?
But I remember last year being like, wait, who?
Anywhere you can get playmakers, though. And speaking of needing playmakers around Bortles, that's exactly one of the things that Dwight Freeney said today. He complimented Bortles, said he's going to be a force in the league, but he needs to get some playmakers around him. Well, ladies, I think they've got some playmakers in place. The problem is, at this point right now, they're rookies too. But I see a lot of potential in a guy like Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns, who goes undrafted, and another great catch from him on Sunday.
And that was the thing that I think Toby Gerhart mentioned, is that he's one of the oldest guys on the team. And I think he's 29 years old. And so we do have a really young team, one of the youngest in the NFL. So I think that really has to take into account.
And a lot of them aren't healthy. I mean, that's part of the problem. Obviously, Cecil Shorts with the hamstring.
Marquise Lee.
Right. And we're getting Ace Sanders back, but Ace hasn't played in a game yet this season. He's also on the smaller side. And so, you know, you look around the league and you see these big receivers and you're like, we don't have that exact prototype. And maybe that's part of the problem.
Allen Robinson is more that big, physical, strong receiver, whereas Marquise Lee is more your speedster guy.
Right.
But you bring up a good point. Ace Sanders coming back this Sunday. I mean, they've already declared Cecil Shorts out, so you're down a receiver there, and a good receiver who's an excellent route runner and has been a huge help to these young rookies and their development. But I'm curious to see, they were very non-committal on Monday talking to Gus about their plan for Ace. He's going to progress back this week in practice, but they haven't even committed to him starting yet. So I'm kind of curious to see how the receiver position is still going to play out on Sunday.
Right. I would expect him not to start, but to play more on special teams this week. But we'll see.
Well, to definitely return punts. Right. Yeah, you know, be a specialist. But yeah, we'll see how that plays out. I hate it for Cecil. Absolutely hate it for Cecil because he is a guy, Donna, who works so hard. He's the guy that you want to see it work out, but these soft tissue injuries can be so devastating sometimes because it's so hard to fully heal from them.
Yeah, especially with somebody like Cecil who's so determined and wants to play out there no matter how he feels. And sometimes you really have to take your pride aside and just step back and let yourself heal fully so that you can be stronger even coming back.
Well, speaking of Cecil Shorts, that's one of the players you're going to hear from coming up. We're going to talk about concussions in the NFL. Cecil's a player who has dealt with that very issue. But guys like Cecil Shorts and Paul Puzlesny, who's also dealt with concussions, Mike Brown, Will Blackman, those guys are all going to share their thoughts on how big of a concern concussions are in the NFL. The Jaguars have already dealt with two players dealing with concussions in Jonathan Cyprian and most recently Dwayne Gratz. So what do all these guys have to say about concussions in the NFL and would they let their sons play? You're going to hear about that next.
And by the way, it was not Clay Harbor. We have been corrected. Danny Noble.
Thank you.
Okay. I knew it was somebody like that.
Well done, Andrew Gibson. All right. Danny Noble. Yeah, that would have taken me forever to get to. All right. You are listening to Helmets and Heels. It is brought to you by Underwood Jewelers for that very special moment. She deserves the best. He deserves the best. You deserve the best. So be sure to go to Underwood's. Concussions in the NFL. How big of a problem are they? And would these players let their sons play? We'll also weigh in on our opinion. That's all coming up next on Helmets and Heels. This is 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to Helmets and Heels. We are live at Everbank Field. Jess Blaylock, Lauren Brooks, Donna Murphy, and Blythe Brumleave all on hand. We are about to get into our thoughts on concussions in the NFL. You will hear from several of your Jacksonville Jaguars. But Lauren, real quick, we want to mention an event that's coming up this weekend with The Roar.
Absolutely. It is the Roar calendar release party, and it was originally scheduled for September 19th, but due to the lovely Florida weather, it was rescheduled for this Saturday, October 4th. Tickets are $15, and you can get them online. Just Google the Clevelander Deck Party with Roar calendar release is how I found it, so pretty easy. I actually got to be on the Clevelander Deck
last... I thought you were going to say you actually got to be in the Roar catalog.
No. I got to be on the Clevelander Deck interviewing a couple people for the Jags' last home game against the Colts, well, first home game. And it is fantastic up there. I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. So I definitely recommend it. You do have to be 21, so the drinks will be flowing. But for everyone who is interested, head on out, and I'm sure it'll be a blast.
No, it looks like a good time up there in the Clevelander Deck. All right, ladies, more of a serious topic, concussions in the NFL. Boy, it seems like every week we are seeing a player go out with concussions. The Jags have already had two players who have dealt with it. Jonathan Cyprian early in the season, he missed a game. He's now back. But Dwayne Gratz, I mean, that was a very scary moment this past Sunday. The way that he landed and his neck kind of bent at a weird angle and he just kind of laid there. I mean, you saw Geno Hayes kneeling on the field and not standing up. I mean, you saw guys all around him and you could tell the concern on their faces. I mean, you could just see it.
And as I was listening to the radio, listening to Jeff Lagerman describe it, I mean, it was, I didn't think he was going to be able to get up. I thought it was going to be a neck injury.
So yeah. And
it was nice
and luckily,
to hear him stand.
And that's one thing, you know, the guys mentioned yesterday. It's the one time you kind of breathe a sigh of relief that it was just a concussion and not a major neck injury or something along
right.
those lines. But, the Jags have seen many players deal with concussions throughout the course of their time here, whether it was a guy like Clint Session, who's no longer here, whether it was a guy like LaRon Robinson, who's no longer here, whether it is guys like Cyprian and Gratz and Shorts, who are still here, it's really becoming almost an epidemic in the NFL. And I don't know if it's turned into that because we're so much more aware now of head injuries or if that's always been the case, but we see it all the time. Here are a couple players weighing in on how big of a concern concussions are. First off, Mercedes Lewis.
Yeah, I think it's very important. You know, obviously when your brain is rattling against your skull in this violent game we play, I think it's very important to, you know, take precaution and, you know, really pay attention to it. So going forward, I think it's good that it's definitely a focus.
Mike Brown.
Yeah, it's becoming a growing problem. You know, there's a lot more guys having concussions, and, you know, it's becoming more of a serious issue. And, you know, hopefully we can find some ways to, you know, I know some of the rules have been adjusted and to try to, you know, cut back on the number of concussions. And, you know, I think they're doing a good job, you know, the best as they can in researching. But nowadays guys are so much bigger, so much faster, you know, it's going to be bigger collisions. So it's kind of part of the game.
Cecil Shorts.
It's your life. It's your brain. That's pretty much how everything works in your body. So to mess around with that, you got to think outside of football. You got life after football. You come to the league 21, 22, 23. Say you play 10 years, you're 31, 32, 33. You know what I mean? It's a lot of life to live, and you want to be functioning well. You know what I mean? You're going to have some bumps and bruises because of the sport's a rough sport. But when it comes to your brain, you got to take that very serious.
Yeah, and I think Cecil puts it best. I mean, you've got to think about life after football. Your career in the NFL may be on the good end, 10 years, 12
Isn't the
years.
Average like 3 years?
I mean, it's crazy. So, you know, you see these guys and you see how hard those hits are, and you see guys hit the field and how scary those moments are. I mean, it's almost an epidemic in the NFL.
Well, I think the thing that people don't realize is a concussion is a traumatic brain injury. So when you hear people talk about TBIs due to car accidents, you think that that sounds really serious. But then you hear concussion and you think, oh, right, they hit their head. It's just going to be a few days. They'll go through the concussion NFL protocol and they'll be fine. It is a traumatic incident to the soft tissue in your skull. There is something that I think people nowadays are finally starting to realize the severity. But growing up with my mother as a speech pathologist, I grew up listening to why you should wear your seatbelt because of TBIs constantly. And you cannot fix your brain. Once it is injured or damaged, you can try and heal it based off of therapy, but you can never fix what's been damaged to a certain degree. And so it is really scary if you're a player or a wife of a player or your parent is a player to think that you're going to be affected or your loved one is going to be affected the rest of their life based off of this stuff.
You know, and I'm pleased with the way the NFL has gone about changing these rules and precautionary reasons for, you know, the players to sit out, and they, you know, need to have the proper doctors on the sidelines and everything like that. And I remember a few years ago when I traveled to the Super Bowl with Mike Dempsey when the Patriots were there, and it was, I believe, the first time that someone was going to wear that specialty helmet, that the mouthpiece would trigger and gauge how much of a force they were hit. That was law firm was wearing that for New England. And it's great to see the progression where they've come. And I don't know if it's reactionary progression because of the lawsuit that's been brought upon them, but still it's, you know, they're moving in the right direction, I hope. And I hope, you know, some teams won't turn out to be like Michigan and Brady Hoke and ignore what I believe they ignored. But I think I like where they're going with it. It's a horrible situation to even, you know, talk about, but I like where they're going with it.
Well, and there's more awareness, but at the same time, you've got to think that these players have to recognize some of the risk that they're taking by putting themselves out on the field and playing a game where you're constantly beating up on each other and taking hard hits. I asked Paul Posluszny about that. Are you aware of the risk when you take the field when it comes to concussions? Here's what he had to say.
We absolutely know the risk of playing this game and what can happen. But with that, you love the game of football and you love to play. So it's something that we're willing to take. And with the amount of awareness that is promoted with concussions, I mean, we are very aware now where it's no longer, well, if you get your head dinged and you're a little bit dizzy. I mean, I feel like now guys are much more aware of the consequences of that, and they're more willing to say something, where in years past it might have been, maybe you didn't say anything, or maybe you played the next week anyway. We're now, I think guys have an understanding that there are long-term negative effects of it if it's not treated properly. So we have to do everything we can to take care of our bodies.
And Blythe, I think that's almost finding the balance. You know, what you're putting your body through and knowing that, yeah, you're taking a risk when you walk out onto the field, but also kind of what Cecil mentioned, knowing that you've got to take care of yourself for the long run too.
And that's the thing is people love about football. What I love about football are the hard hits, the brutal nature of the game. And so it's a little difficult to draw the line of where some of these guys are on the sideline, and it's a tough man's sport. You know, you want to go back out there and you want to win for your team. But at the same time, you do have to take into account that you have a long time after football and you want to be able to walk and you want to be able to think. And concussions, I don't know that it's a growing epidemic. I just think that we're actually starting to pay attention to it now. I think it was Paul Tagliabue, the commissioner before Roger Goodell, he used to call concussions as just something that journalists made up. And so now to see the NFL taking this kind of stand is definitely a step in the right direction.
Well, and we've seen the evolution of the NFL taking a stand, of players being more aware, like Puzlesny said, you know, guys maybe who wouldn't have said anything about the way they were feeling now being able more to stand up and say, oh, this isn't right, you know. But it's also kind of brought up a discussion of kids playing at a young age and taking hits and things like that. I was curious, you know, I wanted to talk to some of these players and get their opinions. Some of these guys are fathers and have young sons, like Will Blackman, like Cecil Shorts. Mercedes Lewis doesn't have a son, but he's got a young daughter who could possibly play sports one day. And I really was curious on some of these players' opinions, whether or not they would let their kids play sports or specifically let their sons play football. Here is what Mercedes Lewis first said on whether or not he would let his son play football, or are there too many concerns?
I mean, you're always going to be concerned because you're a parent, but I would want him to play. I played. I never had any issues. You know, if it's something that he wants to do, I'm not going to tell him no. You know, so, you know, we sign up for it. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, this is what we do. We know, we all know it's a part of the game, and you know, things can happen. So I think all the way down to your kids, you know, you want to take precaution, but you know, can't necessarily stop him from wanting to do something if he wants to do it.
What about Mike Brown? Would he be worried about his son playing football one day?
I mean, I think it's natural for any parent to be kind of worried, not just concussions, but any injury, anytime it's a physical sport like this. But, you know, if my son wants to play, you know, I'm going to support him either way he wants to go. If that's the way he wants to go, then I'll definitely support him.
How about Will Blackman? Would he let his son play football?
It's all whatever he wants to do. I'm not going to force him to play football. I can care less if he does, if he doesn't. If he does, then cool. You know, personally, I think my wife probably wants him like to play flag football, because the one thing about football is its fundamentals. You know, I played football starting at 6 years old, seven, you know, tackle, just because I was already developed and mature enough where I knew how to play the game, where there are some kids who don't know what to do, so they'll drop their head, they'll run slow, they don't know how to move around to protect themselves. I knew how to protect myself as a ball carrier and as a defender, and some of these kids don't. So it's definitely a developmental thing. If a kid's not ready, then by all means, flag all the way as far as can go.
Will Blackman with a young son. Cecil Shorts also with a young son. Does Cecil have concerns about his son playing football?
I do. Being a parent, you think about those things. And me being at the highest level you can be in football, you think about the business side of things. You think about, you know, how much stuff he'll go through with injuries and, you know, being hurt and the possibility of having concussions and such a big issue now. I would never push my son to play football. If he wants to play, okay, let's go for it. We're gonna go for it. But I would never be like, son, you have to play football. And for him to play at a young age, contact-wise, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's worth it. You know what I mean? Because you got to be taught the right way to play. You got to be taught the right way to tackle, the right way to attack somebody when you have the ball using your shoulder. And me and my wife had to sit down and talk. I'm not even sure if I want my son to play football at that age. Maybe flag to get the skills right. You know what I mean? But for contact, I'm not even sure.
And finally, Paul Puzlesny, would he let his son play football one day?
I would. I mean, because, I mean, the game of football has risks, and so does lacrosse and baseball and soccer. So I think it's an outstanding game, and the things that young kids learn from playing football outside of how to block and tackle, I mean, but what it takes between discipline and hard work and setting goals, I think that's enormous. So if you can get him another competitive atmosphere, that's great. But if the kid chooses to be in football, I mean, I think that the way if they're taught properly, that they're taught correctly, and they take care of themselves and are smart with it, then it can be you can have a lot of success playing it, and it can be great for any individual.
All right, so Donna, I'll ask you, because you're the only mother here, from a guy's perspective, from these players' perspective, Cecil has a little bit of a concern, but for the most part, these guys are totally okay with their sons or future sons playing football, obviously making sure they're taught correctly because that's a big part of it, but they're okay with it. From a mother's perspective, from a woman's perspective, you have a young son that's 2 years old. Would you be okay with him playing not just flag football, but contact football at an early age?
Absolutely. And Will Blackman said it best. He was mature enough and knew the proper way to hit. And that always goes first with the coaching. You need to, I feel that whenever our little dude is ready enough to play, if we think that's the route he wants to go, whatever, if he seems like he's a natural at it, I want to make sure that we find the best coaches, the coaches that are coaching correctly, you know, not with the head
teaching
first.
Them the proper yes. form.
Yes, because that's where it starts. You know, he could be great at it, and if he doesn't learn the right way, then that's going to halt him in the progression, obviously. So I'm all for it. I also agree with Will Blackman on if they're not, then start with flag football. I do like that. That's, I mean, you got to get your skills in order and everything like that. I see no harm in that. And then, you know, at a later age, you know, say 8, 10 or whatever, then you can get into contact.
All right, Lauren Blythe, no kids for us, but obviously the perspective of a woman and possibly being a mother one day. Lauren, I'll start with you. Would you be okay with a young son playing contact football?
When we say young son, let's define, I guess, maybe age 6 or under. And I'd say absolutely not. Kids' brains are not exactly, or their bodies aren't caught up quite yet with their brains. 30,000 kids a year end up having long-term disabilities due to concussions. That's a scary fact and figure to me that you could easily prevent if you just hold them out until they are a little bigger. So for me, just the scientific part behind it, I'd rather wait until they are, like you said, a little more mature, more developed. And obviously, it's a per-kid thing. There's some 8-year-olds that are 150 pounds, and then there's some 8-year-olds that are 70 pounds.
I mean, Will Blackman said at 6 years old, he was developed enough.
Right, exactly. So I'm not saying as a blanket statement, my child is not going to be allowed to play contact football. But based off of the, I think it's a higher risk at that younger age. So I would say wait until the risk goes down.
For me personally, I definitely would let my child play any sport that they would want to, because I don't know that this is actually an NFL problem, because women's soccer and women's volleyball, I think their concussion rate outnumbers every other sports league that's out there. So there are always going to be risks whenever they're playing sports, but I think with playing sports, you get so many other added benefits, the competition, the learning how to win and learning how to lose. And there's so many different, the camaraderie of sports. There's so many added benefits that I think that the coaching definitely comes into play. But absolutely, I would let my child play any sport that they wanted to.
I agree. I would be fine with my child playing, at a very young age. And Donna, I mean, I'm with you. I would check the coach out. I would make sure that they were doing everything correctly, that they were teaching them. Because like you mentioned, Blythe, and like Paul Posluszny mentioned, there are so many things outside of just the game of football that growing up in an organized sport teaches you. And maybe a big part of it too is, you know, I've worked a lot of high school football games, and in talking to those players and talking with the coaches and seeing how much playing football all their lives has helped them. It's hard to deny the impact. And that's something, again, that Mike Brown talked about. Did he learn valuable lessons playing the game of football?
Most definitely, yeah. You know, just looking back, speaking from my experience, I've learned, you know, just as much about life as I have about football through the game of football. You know, football gives you a unique opportunity to interact with people that you probably otherwise would never be able to interact with. So that's the positive side of it, that you get so many different backgrounds, so many different demographics, and it's just a great chance to network and meet different types of people.
Completely agree with everything he said. All right, when we do return, we want to take your phone calls. Give us a call at 641-1010. Weigh in on concussions in the NFL. Do you think the rules changes are protecting players? Do you think that they're a good thing for the sport? If you have kids, if you don't have kids, feel free to weigh in. Would you let a young child play football, be it contact football, be it flag football? What is your opinion? We want to hear from you. 641-1010, 641-1010. Helmets and Heels, Underwood Jewelers is our sponsor. We want to thank them for everything that they do for us. If you are looking for any sort of jewelry for a special occasion, go check out Underwood Jewelers. They are the best in the business. Your phone calls when we do return. This is 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Lots of concussion talk tonight on Helmets and Heels. You heard from several players. We all weighed in. Now we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 641-1010. Let us know, how big of a concern are concussions in the NFL to you? Do you think that the league is doing enough to kind of watch out for these players? Maybe on the opposite end, do you think that the league is doing too much and it's kind of affecting the game in a negative way? And finally, would you want your own kids to play? Have your kids played? Are you fine with it? We want to hear from all of you. Give us a call at 641-1010. We'll start off with George. George, you're on Helmets and Heels. What's going on?
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, I played football from high school. I played some semi-pro, and I've suffered 9 concussions in just about 8 years. And I have short-term memory loss now. It really aggravates my wife because she'll tell me something and I forget it. And I do believe the NFL is going in the right direction as far as taking precaution with concussions. And it needs to be taught, like you guys were saying, at a young age, to be able to teach properly how to tackle, how to hit, to protect themselves on the field. Because if not, it's going to lead to, say, for instance, like the Junior Seau incident and things right. like that, where it's going to become more prevalent in the media that this bad stuff is going to happen.
Do you think that there was a lack of awareness, maybe even as recent as 15, 10 years ago?
Oh, most definitely. You know, a lot of this, like you were saying, TBI and things of that nature are coming out now because of the media coverage of, you know, some of these players that are having difficulty, some of the older ones, especially from the 60s and 70s and 80s. And it's now becoming a limelight because of the fact that it's so prevalent now.
All right, thank you so much for the call, George. Yeah, I mean, he
had to have been with a kid right there. That was awesome.
He mentioned Junior Seau, who obviously committed suicide, and later, when they did some research, found that he was suffering from, you know, had suffered so many concussions that they had definitely taken a toll. And I agree. I think that even as recent as 10 years ago, there was not nearly as much of an emphasis on player safety and concussions and things like that. And Blythe, you even kind of hit on that earlier. Kind of, it is a tough man sport. A guy doesn't want to sit on the sideline and watch his teammates play. He wants to be out there. It doesn't matter if he has a concussion or not. And I think a lot of players probably played through a lot of concussions, maybe not even realizing at the time what was going on.
Oh, no doubt. I was actually having a conversation last week about concussions, and what they're monitoring is the full-blown concussion. I don't really know the scientific term for it, but what is also happening as well is a lot of players are suffering these mini concussions, and they're not being documented. And so over several games, over several years, these players are suffering what could constitute 3 to 4 to, you know, maybe even 10 concussions, but they're minor. So they add up slowly, so it's not just one at one time. It adds up over time.
And don't get us wrong, because I know that right now we're just concentrating on the NFL, but, you know, it's obviously well aware that it happens in all form of sports, you know, female sports, men's sports, you know, whatnot. But it's just because I was reading, I know that off air we were talking about the comparison to rugby and NFL, and I was just reading an article that this one city, this one place in Scotland, she wanted to ban rugby officially because out of 120 matches, 37 injuries happened. And she's like, that's it. I'm done. No more rugby here. So, but they're more concerned, it says, with spinal injuries for them as opposed to concussions. So,
all right, let's go back to the phone lines. Dan. Dan, you're on Helmets and Heels. What's up?
Hey, good evening, ladies. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, first of all, I just want to tell you, I live in Melbourne, down in Melbourne, Florida, and I get to listen to you guys with the TuneIn Radio app, but I work in Orlando, and every Tuesday night, I take off for 4 hours so I can go coach my son's football team, and so for the hour and a half there, I get to listen to Frank and you guys talk, and then my hour and a half back to duty, I get to listen to you guys, and I've really enjoyed your show. I'm driving back,
I'm doing it now. Thank you.
So, yeah, so with that, I coach my son's team. It's his tackle team. He's 7. It's his second year playing. So I totally understand the concern about young kids getting involved in tackle football. And I'll tell you that things have changed over the last couple of years with USA football, which you'll see on all the stadiums, the big heads-up promotion. The thing over the last several years is changing how we teach kids, especially, you know, 6 and 7, it's their first time ever in pads. So we're teaching them not only the techniques of football, now we're teaching them, not to say they weren't right before, but now we're, because of all this new science, we're teaching them the proper way and good habits early on to hopefully prevent concussions one day, and getting them on the right track and showing them how to, you know, basically use their bodies, how they should use their bodies, and definitely look at what they're hitting as opposed to just putting your head down and closing your eyes and just trying to hit somebody. So the technique is there from a very early age, and like I said, just trying to get good technique, which they'll be with them the rest of their life, hopefully.
And Dan, this is a side note question for you, because sure. You said you go there and coach them as well. Do you right. coach them on being good teammates, on being, you know, having the proper etiquette on field? What do you teach them?
Well, I tell you what, that more than anything, especially at this young age, teamwork, and I'll get on to rivalry later, but teamwork is the big one. A rivalry, I try to subtly promote some rivalries, but the things that these kids have learned just from how to deal with people that don't necessarily look like them, don't come from the same neighborhood, that are on their team that they've never had to deal with before. You know, without talking about it, they're exposed to some things that they're just maybe weren't comfortable with, and now they're just, I feel like they've become better role models. Because, I mean, when you're Friday, whether you're in senior in high school or you're in college, or even when you're 6 years old, you're wearing your jersey to the lunchroom on Friday, you know, game day, they're looking at you a little different. So when you've got those jerseys on, you're a role model, and how they treat people. And I've, you know, in the last, since we started fall camp in July or summer camp with these kids, they just treat people a little different. Their respect for how do they learn how to listen to their coaches and hopefully their teachers, moms and dads. It seems like, and maybe I'm wishful thinking, but it seems like they're just a little better at that stuff. So the teamwork, more than anything, like I said, at this age, is more important to me than wins and losses.
Dan, thanks so much for the call, and sure. I think he hit it. I mean, because that's the same thing that Mike Brown talked about. You're exposed to maybe teammates that aren't exactly like you, and you learn how to build relationships with all sorts of people, not just people who are like yourself. And, I mean, that's one thing Dan mentioned, too, on the call.
Yeah, I think he gets Coach of the Year, by the way.
For sure. He's having a lot of kids sign up for his team after that.
Yeah, congratulations, Dan.
And thanks for listening to us from Melbourne/Orlando.
Definitely. We appreciate that. But, yeah, I think that's a big thing. And, again, that goes back to what Mike Brown talked about and what Paul Posluszny talked about, how it's not just the game of football. It is life. Lessons, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, and I know, Jess, you grew up playing sports, and a lot of us were around it. I grew up, I mean, when I was 3, dancing up until I was, 22 or whatever. So, you know, being around just a team atmosphere, and yes, you can call dance a team because we do dances all together.
We weren't saying anything.
No, I will argue that is a sport in a heartbeat.
But we'll argue you.
Yeah, I learned so much from winning, losing, because you do, you know. You win, you lose. Going up against opponents that you see every competition or every outing, you know. It's great, and I really want my son to be able to experience all of that.
On the dance team?
Yes.
Even better.
If he shows signs, I'm happily doing
it. All right, let's try and fit in a few more calls, and then we might take a little look around the NFL, some of the stories that are going on. Bert, you're up next on Helmets and Heels.
Hello.
Hey, how are you, Bert?
I can't complain. How about yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Team is team when it comes to kids playing football.
Team is team?
He
doesn't want to expand. All right, team is team,
yes.
According to Bert.
Apparently it's not me, it's team.
It is team. All right, let's check in with Michael. Michael, you're on Helmets and Heels.
Well, I think what he was trying to say is, you know, a team is a team no matter what sport, and that's what I think as well. I mean, the fact is the competitive nature of sports is great for the kids, like y'all been saying, but Carnell Lake's son used to be on my son's baseball team, and I asked him, what I should do with my son, whether he should play football. He recommended that you wait till middle school and play other sports, especially flag, because it teaches misdirection and body control. And I had two sons. One of them went that route, and one of them didn't. And one of them went Pop Warner. They're both fine. They're both adjusted. The one that went flag is still playing football. The one that went Pop Warner is surfing every day. So,
really?
Yeah. Well, so it's incredible how they can be so different. And one thing they do is they respect their opponents, and that's what they learn from their coaches. So,
it's amazing. Thank you, Michael. We appreciate it. It's amazing to see, though, how competitive it is now as far as football. And if you want to get a scholarship, and really any sport in general, baseball as well, if you want to get a scholarship, I mean, these kids are starting so early to get as much of a competitive edge as possible. And I mean, you can't coach. If you've got talent to play the game, you've got talent. Coaching and everything may help, but you got to have a little bit of God-given talent to play eventually in the NFL. So I don't know if maybe starting a kid at six versus starting in middle school is going to make a huge difference based on whether or not he's got talent for the game. But that's the one thing that I wonder. Are parents, our kids who want to play, willing to wait till middle school when they see all their friends around them getting such an early start on the game?
I mean, that's the thing. You do have to have talent, you know, and I can't remember. You guys might know this Saturday when I was watching one of the college games, one of the starting quarterbacks only was a quarterback for his senior year. So clearly, you know, if you have talent, you have talent. You can wait. It doesn't matter. It'll pop up, you know, when you're 12. It'll pop up when you're 18, whatever. But
And you can teach technique and you can teach the fundamentals of the game without having the kid in contact football. You can come in and watch Jeff Lagerman talk about X's and O's on a board and teach your kids, you know, certain concepts and everything that you don't have to have them risking their future, smartness. Can I just use that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Their future aptitude, based off of that. So like I said, for me, if the child is six and they're not a big kid, I think you hold them out until they get a little bigger.
All right. This is Helmets and Heels brought to you by Underwood Jewelers. When we do return, we will give you our pick in Jacksonville's next game against the Steelers. We'll also look at their next opponent after that, Cleveland, who's going to face Tennessee. Will also tell you what we think is going to happen in that one. Do want to remind you, if you're looking for something to do this weekend, Saturday night on the Clevelander deck, it is the Roar Calendar Launch Party. Open bar from 8 to 9, a.k.a. Jackpot. There's going to be a Roar meet and greet, a guest appearance from DJ Nick Fresh. You can party on the deck. The pools will be open for everyone. It's going to be the best party in Jacksonville before the Steelers game. That is this Saturday night at the Clevelander deck.